Welcome to the Latchkey Tales, Book 3, The Widows of Rincon Hill, a tale of horticultural horror, written and performed for podcast by M.J. Hahn. Prologue, The Shadow of the Isis Heart. In the months following the bizarre events on top of the Pyramid Tower, the night that the dead rose up and walked the city streets, it's safe to say that San Francisco was definitely a little stranger than usual. For starters, the weather had become completely unhinged. The remainder of the summer had consisted of weeks full of nothing but torrential rainstorms and hurricane-strength winds, which brought most of the city to a complete standstill. The tides were rising and falling dramatically without any sort of rhyme or reason, leaving the marina and the Embarcadero paralyzed with cruise ships and cargo vessels stranded in their docks. Then the storm stopped abruptly, much to everyone's relief, only to be followed by a scorching heat wave that descended over the usually mild holiday months. Days of blazing sun followed by eerily calm evenings, or what the locals referred to as earthquake weather. Their laid-back attitude soon sat up and took notice when a series of tremors rattled the city shortly after. Although relatively mild, the intermittent shaking did hint at something a little more ominous and foreboding, and needless to say, the locals hushed right up. Of course, this wasn't anything unusual as far as Grandpa Theo was concerned. To tell the truth, he had been anticipating much worse ever since the destruction of the Isis Heart. Nothing had been the same since the enormous ruby had shattered and vaporized, along with any trace of GT's new supernatural BFF, Tina Bleiberman. Theodorus Golden also had an itching suspicion that things would be getting a lot worse sooner than anyone dared to guess, especially since his grandson Crowley still refused to take his newly vested watchtower duties seriously.
"Don't make me tell you again, you lunkhead! The spheres have become misaligned, and it's your job to get everything back on track. What did you think being a watchtower meant?"
In his defense, it's not like Crowley had been exactly slacking off when it came to his extracurricular hocus-pocus practice. Let's just say that he was a little reluctant to delve any deeper into this particular subject than he already had. Plus, everything had gotten a little too disturbingly real since his former, well, let's call her girlfriend, had surprised everybody when she had attempted to cut out Crowley's beating heart as part of a blood sacrifice to Anubis. Yeah, maybe reluctant didn't quite cover it. Still, at GT's insistence, Crowley had relented, and just like that, John D's Omnia Magica had reappeared, indeed, as if by magic. GT had even bookmarked all of the essential chapters in the enormous ancient leather-bound tome that Crowley had shied away from the year before. Honestly, the last thing Crowley wanted to do was brush up on his arcane Latin and then attempt to decipher hundreds of impossibly complicated diagrams, but apparently it came with the Watchtower territory. Crowley also found himself reading a great deal about the ancient art of scrying. It seemed that a large portion of John Dee's writings pertained to all manner of methods for divining the future, before you even had to stoop to the conventional crystal ball. If he concentrated and managed the correct incantation, Crowley had found that an ordinary glass bowl full of water could produce strange swirling images that he could almost decipher. He was happy to see that, as far as he could see, there were no death cults or murderous blondes on the immediate horizon. But it wasn't all good news. When, on a whim, Crowley had tried to forecast future events between himself and his, well, let's call her his current girlfriend, Yuki O'Malley, it was then that he had first spotted the strange dark void that was clouding Yuki's future. She was like a bright beacon that was suddenly enveloped and obscured from his vision. After several attempts, the only detail Crowley could gather from the future was that this strange darkness began sometime around Yuki's birthday. Which was odd, because Yuki's birthday had been in the forefront of Crowley's plans lately. He was determined to make up for his colossal blunder the previous year, and had even already gotten Yuki the perfect gift, courtesy of Mrs. Flack's unusual friend, Mr. Bloom, and his pricey antique store. Crowley had carefully seen to every detail that he could think of, and he was convinced that everything would be perfect. Yes, Crowley refused to believe that the universe would dare to conspire against him and his secret plans for making sure that Yuki's 15th birthday would be the most memorable night ever. Chapter 1. Audra Interrupted. Dr. Elliot Spigot was putting the finishing touches on his list of recommendations between bites of his pale commissary salad. A couple of guards were eyeing him from an adjacent table. They weren't exactly subtle with their sneers and grumbling under their breath.
"That's the tree-hugging head-shrinker who doesn't know his ass from his elbow."
Dr. Spigot was far too professional to acknowledge their remarks. It just made him long for the days before the cutbacks had kicked in, back when the physician's dining room was still open. Indeed, there had been many changes at the Halcyon Valley State Hospital since the state funding had been reduced to a meager trickle. It was a miracle that the place was still up and running, what with the bad plumbing and the outdated electrical systems that were just hovering outside of complete failure most of the time. Recently, the hospital had been forced to resort to some extreme measures to make ends meet. Among these was the collection of the rather generous vouchers received for transferred inmates from the state high security system. The steady stream of transfers had begun to arrive weekly. They were mostly comprised of the elderly, non-violent, yet slightly twitchy variety, the ones that would benefit from a regular strict pharmaceutical regimen. And this is where Dr. Spigot came in. His specialty was administering the initial evaluations of all arriving potential patients. He had a particularly keen eye for spotting the junkies and the clever fakers. After all, it was his final decision that officially reclassified them from inmates to patients. And so, his afternoon roster had followed suit. Just a dozen or so evaluations, the bulk of which he had already sneaked a look at and would make quick work out of. Except for one that had caught his attention. Dr. Spigot scanned over his papers until he found the file in question. He flipped through the pages, clicked his ballpoint pen, and began to review his evaluation.
"Regarding the transfer of inmate number 0265-7072.
Spigot returned to the file and chuckled at the inmate's listed name.
"An obvious alias. That'll be a good place to start."
He continued to skim over his legal pad.
"Inmate has a non-existent record except for this latest charge of attempted homicide, which looks very suspicious. I'm forced to wonder how she ended up in a high-security facility based on the specious nature of the case. She shows no signs of violence or hostility due to her advanced age. Current sedation levels are excessive, in my opinion, as is the assertion that she remained blindfolded at all times. This is clearly a case of elder abuse. After my initial observation, I'm confident to report that this inmate poses no possible threat. She is clearly a victim of the system, not to mention the vendetta-like bias of the arresting officer."
Spigot returned to his notes and frowned.
"Arresting officer, Sergeant Inspector Morty Golden."
Spigot wondered why this Inspector Golden had made such a fuss over such a seemingly harmless old woman. Her file was full of pages and pages of the inspector's nonsensical ramblings. Spigot's eyes scanned over the final paragraph of Golden's report and puzzled.
"Most irregular."
Apparently, the inspector's father had also been a specialist consultant on the case. He had also added a personal notation that didn't make any sense. Some crackpot diagnosis that the inmate possessed a strange affliction called mesmeric basilixia. Spigot chuckled again.
"Well, that's a new one."
Suddenly, a tiny chime rang on his phone. He glanced down and saw that his modest lunch hour had run its course. Spigot adjusted the enameled Hugs Heel pin on his lapel and gathered up his papers. With a little sigh, he stood up from the table. The adjacent guard's glowering stares fell on him, and then on the sad, abandoned salad which remained behind as he departed.
"Now then, if we're going to make any headway here, we need to operate from a place of trust. So why don't we start with this name of yours? That's not our real name now, is it? Don't we feel like sharing? Come on now, You can tell me. What's our real name?
The inmate didn't respond. Under the harsh fluorescent lights, Dr. Spigot was sitting across from inmate number 0265-7072. She was seated in a wheelchair, positively swimming in her pink prison uniform. Both of her thin, bony wrists were tied down in heavy restraints, and her ankles clanked with the manacles that were tangled in the wheelchair's footrest. Her bald head lolled a little to the side, either under the weight of the heavy black leather blindfold which was securely buckled in place, or from the heavy sedation which she had been kept under for months. The halo of golden screws twinkled in the bright overhead light, catching Dr. Spigot's eye as he moved a little closer and began to loosen the blindfold.
I want to show you that you can trust me, okay? We're safe here. No one is going to try to hurt you.
There was a sharp intake of Spigot's breath as the blindfold came loose. He was shocked at the sight of the living skull before him, the network of blue veins pulsing under the pale, stretched skin, the shrunken, pallid face which housed two enormous tawny eyes which still appeared dull and glassy from all the sedatives.
There now, that's better, isn't it?
It was as if the light slowly began to flick on one by one behind those golden eyes. Inmate number 0265-7072 raised her head and seemed to see Dr. Spigot for the first time. Her voice croaked like moist ash.
What is this? Where am I?
The doctor's smile brimmed with therapeutic courtesy.
My name is Dr. Spigot. We're here to have a little chat, and if everything works out, this will be your new home. Won't that be nice?
She seemed to only half hear him. Her head lolled sideways as her eyes disappeared halfway back into her skull.
Home? Back to the city? Little Desmond? Where is he?
Dr. Spigot's bedside manner didn't falter as he scanned over his notes.
That's okay. We're just gonna take our time. Since you've brought him up, why don't we talk about this Desmond of yours? How about you tell me everything you can remember about him, okay? Can we do that?
A small smile played about inmate number 0265-7072's thin lips.
It's been many, many years. So long ago, like another lifetime. Entirely.
It was an unusually warm night. During the summer of 1978, the new disco hotspot known as the I-Beam had only been open for a few months, breaking new ground in the otherwise groovy, hippie Haight-Ashbury neighborhood. Inside the I-Beam's cramped, smoky space, the music thumped and the disco balls sparkled. Dressed in one of his new Italian linen suits, with his silver hair discreetly feathered back, Desmond Derwinter was perched on a stairwell, the spot which afforded the best overview of the undulating crowd. The evening had been a little lackluster despite the non-stop disco inferno, complete with the usual assortment of amorous advances from all manner of interested parties. But Desmond was bored. Even after several cocktails, he still couldn't seem to get his mind off of his dreary financial situation, not to mention the plan which he had been scheming to remedy it. A plan that had been looking a little dubious since it had been over 10 years in the making already. And this was the big problem. Things just weren't moving fast enough. Desmond sighed. Then, across the room in the flashing lights, he spotted a figure who hadn't caught his attention before. A lanky woman, all in white, with a long curtain of wavy blonde hair, was slowly working her way around the dance floor. Her thin frame seemed to glide through the bouncing crowd, the glow of the black lights making her dress blink on and off. Desmond watched as she was encircled by two disco aficionados who were both sporting their finest white Saturday Night Fever double knit. The men began to paw at her while they danced. The woman seemed to take this in her stride. She turned and simply looked at each of them in the eye. Their posture seemed to slacken and they each stopped their advances on the spot. Desmond was surprised as he watched each of them happily hand over their wallets with a wide grin. The woman quickly extracted all of the cash from both, then casually handed them back. Then she collected their watches and rings, all of which she expertly stashed in her discreet shoulder bag. The disco aficionado seemed perfectly fine with this and disappeared into the crowd under the flashing lights, while the woman resumed her prowl across the floor. Desmond raised a well-groomed eyebrow.
"My, isn't that something?"
He had never seen anything like it in all his years. And it looked like the mysterious woman wasn't finished yet, because shortly after, she was doing something similar to a gentleman with an enormous mustache who was wearing a rather unfortunate patchwork denim suit. He, too, handed over his wallet, as well as all of his turquoise jewelry. She relieved him of all of his cash, and he seemed thrilled as she threw his empty wallet back in his face. Desmond was mystified. He watched the woman complete her circuit of the dance floor, then disappear towards the exit. Suddenly, the urge to follow her proved irresistible. He set down his unfinished gin and tonic and navigated his way through the crowd until he was barreling down the flight of narrow stairs to the street. Among the few milling groups that were walking along H Street, he couldn't spot her.
Damn! Now where could she have gotten off to?
Discouraged, he began to walk down the block, wandering towards the corner in hopes of flagging a cab. Then he heard the rasping, strangely accented voice come from out of nowhere.
"Were you looking for me?"
The woman was standing there behind him, her long blonde waves blowing on the breeze. Desmond looked around, realizing that the street suddenly seemed very quiet. There wasn't a soul in sight in any direction. The woman smiled.
"Since you went to such trouble to find me, I'm only happy to oblige."
Desmond was drawn into the enormous eyes where he saw the yellow fire kindle and catch. It blazed up and reached out for him, yet somehow he was able to resist its insistent embrace. The woman frowned and turned up the voltage in her golden eyes. Desmond began to laugh.
"I don't think that's going to work with me, my dear."
He watched her struggle to wrestle his will under her control, which resisting, he had to admit, was quite a task. She was tenacious to a fault. But once he adjusted his thoughts, it became easier to manage. Desmond found himself thinking back to the crooked, winding streets of old Budapest, where his mother had shown him and his younger brother the crafty trick of the mind that deflected the evil eye of the gypsies. Desmond snapped back to the present as the woman finally relented and her yellow eyes cooled.
"How are you doing this? No one has ever been able to resist me. Just a little something that I learned in the old country."
The woman seemed to reappraise him suddenly.
"Oh, really? And just how old would that be, I wonder?" "Old enough to know better than not to squander such a golden opportunity."
The woman tilted her head slightly as Desmond straightened himself up.
"My dear, please allow me to introduce myself. My name is Desmond De Winter, and I run a little place up on Nob Hill, the Belfair. Perhaps you've heard of it."
The woman shook her head, but she did seem to perk up a little at the mention of the Nob Hill address.
"Perhaps you might like to join me for a little late supper. I have some business matters I'd like to discuss with you."
The woman nodded as a taxi pulled up to the corner.
"Of course, we can't do business if we're not properly acquainted, now can we? I don't believe I caught your name, my dear."
The woman tucked an errant blonde curl behind an ear and smiled.
"The name is Aldra. Aldra Clytemnestra Ogborn von Gruft Lamolle. So pleased to make your acquaintance, darling. And I have a motorcycle. Perhaps we could get there quicker if I do the driving, yes?"
Desmond laughed.
"Aldra. Aldra Lamolle on a motorcycle. Of course. Perfect, my dear. Perfect. Lead the way."
The sound of the metal door closing echoed across the examination room, interrupting Audra's story. Dr. Spigot realized that he felt a little dazed. He blinked and tried to clear his head. He thought he almost felt drunk. So at ease that he looked down at his clipboard like he had suddenly forgotten what it was for and why he was sitting in this room across from this woman. Dr. Spigot's nostrils twitched involuntarily when they detected the cigarette smoke. He looked up and saw that Audra was now smoking, with her golden eyes fixed on him. Her manacles and restraints were neatly stacked on the table in front of her. Dr. Spigot blinked, a little confused. Then he glanced over at the hulking orderly standing in the doorway. He was one of the recent hires, the surly one with the odd gray eyes.
Yes? It's Winters, isn't it?
The orderly standing in the doorway slowly nodded and smiled.
Almost. And if you're all finished here, I believe it's checkout time.
Dr. Spigot's head spun around as he realized that the orderly was speaking to his potential patient rather than himself. Audra crushed her cigarette out in the middle of Dr. Spigot's paperwork.
Yes, dear Danilov, I believe you're right. I think I've had enough institutional lighting to last several lifetimes.
It was at this point that the aforementioned fluorescent lights suddenly began to flicker and extinguish. A heartbeat later, alarms began to sound and the emergency lights switched on. In one swift move, Danilov was suddenly standing behind Dr. Spigot, one hand holding the hospital lanyard wrapped tight around the doctor's neck. Spigot's face was slowly turning from red to purple.
Now, let's show the good doctor a little professional courtesy, yes?
Danilov relaxed his grip and Spigot crumpled over, gasping. He sat up in his chair, only to find himself face to face with Audra's golden eyes.
Yes, Dr. Spigot. I can't say it's been a pleasure.
Spigot was just going to sputter his cry for help when he suddenly found himself bathed once more in the yellow fire that ignited in Audra's eyes. They drew him in without a care in the world as they began to scour his memory until it was squeaky clean. Audra removed his white physician's coat and wrapped herself in it. Danilov produced a short brown wig and a pair of middle-aged mom glasses.
Sorry these aren't the most glamorous, but they'll have to do for now until we meet up with Dez and get you fixed up proper.
Audra took the wig with a scowl as her halo of golden screws twinkled in the blinking emergency lights. She tucked her few strands of white hair under the perky bob and slipped the glasses on. Danilov chuckled.
How sweet! You look like you could be somebody's mom.
Behind the pink cubic zirconia butterflies which bordered her new glasses, the golden flames flickered in Audra's eyes. Danilov's smirk promptly vanished.
Right. Should be easy enough to just stroll out of here now. Shall we?
Audra nodded as she removed the Hugs heel pin from her lapel and tossed it down onto Dr. Spigot, who had curled up into a ball and was gurgling something unintelligible from under the table. Danilov swung open the examination room door to the clamor of the growing chaos swarming outside. He grinned and whisked Audra out of the room and down the corridor. And so, Chapter 1 comes to a close. Music on the program provided by freesound.org and incomtech.com. For more information, please check out the Latchkey Tales fan page on Facebook. Please stay tuned for Chapter 2. And until then, this is MJ Hahn saying goodbye for now, and thanks for listening.